Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This is the John Fugelsang Podcast.
Let us begin. Welcome to everybody who's listening to the John Fugelsang Podcast, as well as live on SiriusXM and on the SiriusXM app or on demand. We always invite you guys to write to us, either through johnfugelsang.com or our show's Facebook page. I want to begin tonight's rant in a very different way, with a very different kind of rant. Here is the sounds of the Washington National Cathedral. The bells of the Washington National Cathedral were rung 1,000 times in memory of the 1 million Americans who have died from COVID-19. Washington Post, like many other media publications, are trying to make sense of this number. A million Americans. Washington Post said, try this comparison. The population of D.C. is about 670,000 people. Try to imagine life without every person in every building on every street in the nation's capital. And then imagine another 330,000 people are gone. It's a number that's impossible to conceive of. And most counts have yet to officially reach 1 million. Johns Hopkins University passed 999,000 yesterday morning. But the true sum of COVID deaths is already way past a million. The CDC estimated that the number of excess deaths during the pandemic already surged past 1 million during the winter Omicron wave last January. And, you know, even if you're using conservative reasoning here, this virus is ranked only behind heart disease and cancer as one of America's top three leading causes of death over the past 2 years. I want you to think about the people we've lost. Think about the people you've lost. I'm so grateful for all the folks who have had it and gotten better. I'm grateful for the folks who had it and, thanks to vaccines, didn't even know. I pray for the folks who had it, sort of got better, but are living with it long-term in a world where we don't yet understand what long-haul COVID means. But this is not about everyone who's still here. This is about the people we've lost. The first confirmed case was reported in the States on January 20th, 2020. When a man flew home to Seattle from Wuhan, China. He was 35, and he had 10 days of pneumonia and fever, nausea, vomiting, but he lived. And then the deaths began to be reported a few weeks later. In February 2020, an unfamiliar respiratory ailment began spreading through a nursing home outside Seattle called the Life Care Center of Kirkland. Now, testing, of course, was not really available in the early days of the pandemic, and we didn't know what was going on. The death toll was actually much higher around that time. And in the early weeks and months, many people who died of this had influenza or pneumonia on their death certificates. We'll never know the true number. The first confirmed COVID-19 death was announced in late February of 2020. It was a man in Washington State in his 50s. Our last show together in this building here on SiriusXM was March 12th, 2020. While we were here, Donald Trump did a nationwide address from the Oval Office, where he lied and said that testing and treatment would be free for all Americans. By the end of March, The pandemic's death toll had surpassed Hurricane Katrina's from 2005. And within a couple of weeks, COVID-19, and it's called that because 2019 is the year it was first diagnosed and identified. COVID-19 had killed more people than all of the plane crashes in the USA over the previous two decades. By the end of March 2020, a little over 2 years ago, we'd already had 3,500 deaths, and Dr. Anthony Fauci, the lead expert on infectious diseases, predicted eventually this would take more than 100,000 lives. By early April of 2020, COVID had already killed more American citizens than everyone killed in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan combined. But then in April, something funny happened. April 2020, that was when they announced it was mainly affecting minorities, mostly African Americans. And that's when Donald Trump and right-wing media began talking about reopen America. I mean, because by late spring of 2020, it seemed like things were going to get a little better. But all these governors started reopening their states, and the deaths spiraled all over again, especially in the South and the Southwest. And after 3 months, if you'll recall, the U.S. death toll had surpassed 100,000 people. In the 2 years since then, the death rates have gone up and down because we've had different waves of different variants sweeping the country. We had more than 4,000 deaths a day in early 2021. The U.S. has the highest official death total in the world. WHO believes the true death toll may be much higher elsewhere. I mean, it's several million in India. We know it, but it's not reported. Our country has recorded more than 80 million cases out of 330 million who live here. The first wave, the first pandemic, had highs of 2,500 daily reported deaths. That was in April 2020. And that was 8 months before the vaccines were first available in December of that year. And, you know, they gave a lot of reasons for why America was being hit so much harder than other countries. High rates of obesity, high rates of hypertension, overworked hospital systems, lack of affordable, accessible healthcare, vaccine hesitancy, and a large population of seniors. Of the 50 states, the highest death toll has been California. About 90,000 California residents have died. Number two is Texas, about 86,000. Number three is Florida, about 74,000. New York City was at one point the world capital for COVID cases and COVID deaths. It was a terrifying time to live here with a small child. The first time I found hand sanitizer in an independent drugstore, I felt like I'd struck gold. New York has had the fourth highest death toll, about 68,000. On a per capita basis, the CDC data shows Mississippi has had about 418 deaths per 100,000 residents, followed by Arizona, 414, Alabama, 399, and West Virginia. The per capita death rate in those states is way higher than the average U.S. national rate, which is about 300 deaths per 100,000 residents. Joe Biden said, 1 million COVID deaths, 1 million empty chairs around the family dinner table, each irreplaceable losses. Our heart goes out to all those who are struggling, asking themselves, how do we go on without him? How do we go on without her? Joe Biden ordered the White House flags to be lowered to half-mast to mark the milestone. Have they been in your town? I've seen schools all over New York City this week with the flag at half-mast. Dr. Mark Cameron, who's a professor in the Department of Population and Quantitative Health Sciences at Case Western, told the BBC these dangerous surges where our hospitals were full and new deaths were overwhelming have all come on the heels of new variants. And he's right. The monthly death toll peaked in January of last year, 2021. 96,000 people died in that 1 month. That's more than people who died in the Vietnam and Korean Wars. In the winter of 2021, on the average, about 2,500 Americans died every day. This would be like the attack on Pearl Harbor happening every day for 3 months straight. The COVID-19 pandemic killed between 13 million to 17 million people, they think, worldwide in 2020 and 2021. They think it's tripled the number of deaths officially attributed to the disease. And by the time the first vaccine shots were even available, in December of 2020, more than 300,000 Americans had already died. Most of the 1 million people who have died in America lost their lives after the vaccines were introduced. Now, a lot of right-wing media will try to smear Joe Biden for that for political reasons. You know this. But that's down to just the amount of people who are catching the virus. It doesn't mean the vaccines weren't working. The vaccines work. They massively cut severe COVID risk. The RAND Corporation is not a liberal think tank. They are very conservative. And they credit the vaccines with saving 140,000 lives in the U.S. by May of last year alone. The Peterson Center for Healthcare and the Kaiser Family Foundation last month, estimated that around a quarter of U.S. deaths, about 234,000 Americans who have died, could have been prevented with the vaccines. The data is clear. The risk of COVID-19 and death is much higher in the unvaccinated. And as the vaccinations increased, you know this, the number of deaths began to fall. In July of last year, we registered 8,600 COVID deaths. Now, 8,600 people dying from one thing in 1 month is massive. It would be unthinkable a couple of years ago. But that was the lowest monthly toll in more than a year, 8,600 deaths. That was a relief to only lose that many in 1 month. The Delta variant took over the country. The virus got stronger. Last September and October alone, COVID-19 killed more than 100,000 Americans. By then, COVID's total death toll had surpassed the number of people who died in the 1918 influenza pandemic in the U.S. And here's the thing. Deaths have been reported across all age groups, all ethnic groups, but experts have noted certain sectors of the population have been more likely to die from it, particularly the elderly and those with comorbidities. Government data shows the vast majority of COVID deaths in the U.S., about 740,000, about three quarters of those who have died, three quarters of a million, have been people older than 65. The essential workers, the people we were calling heroes 2 years ago when the pandemic began, they face substantially higher risks than Americans who are working from computer screens at home. And we know who the essential workers were, don't we? CDC data that the Kaiser Family Foundation analyzed showed, particularly in the early stages of the pandemic in 2020, Black Americans, Hispanic Americans, and Native Americans, experienced much higher rates of infection and much higher rates of death. Age-adjusted data shows Black, Hispanic, and Native Americans were about twice as likely to die from COVID-19 as white people, which just underscores everything we talk about, everything this channel talks about, the long-standing disadvantages, the long-standing injustice, the long-standing, well, some would call it institutionalized racism in housing, institutionalized racism in the workplace, institutionalized racism in terms of access to healthcare, employment, and underlying conditions. And yes, public health experts say there's a lot of reasons why minorities have been hit harder. Elevated risk of exposure due to working conditions, living conditions, vaccine hesitancy, absolutely, among some groups. In 2021, this pandemic killed nearly 476,000 people. Last year, more people died from COVID-19 than strokes, Alzheimer's disease, diabetes, influenza, and pneumonia combined in 2020. So, you know, we probably passed a million deaths in America a long time ago. What's the indirect toll of this virus? That's going to be much higher. I mean, think about how much the health systems were disrupted. Think about all the people who didn't go to the hospital when they were sick because they were terrified. People who were afraid to get medical attention because they were so terrified of this virus. We'll never know. We'll never know the true death toll from COVID. There was one study in the PLOS Medicine Journal in May of 2021 found that for every 100 deaths directly blamed on COVID, another 20 excess deaths occurred that were not, many of them in areas with what they called lower socioeconomic status. So think about that. For every 100 deaths, add another 20 from people who were killed because of COVID, not directly by it. There was a study released yesterday by the World Health Organization. They said it's more than 140 excess deaths per 100,000 people in 2020 and 2021. In other words, about 930,000 more lives lost than would have been expected on the average. Terrence McNally was one of our favorite guests on this show, four-time Tony Award-winning playwright. He died in March of 2020. He wrote Masterclass, Love, Valor, Compassion. He wrote Frankie and Johnny, which became the movie with Michelle Pfeiffer and Al Pacino. A great playwright. Andrew Jack, he was an actor and a coach. He was in Star Wars Episode 7 as part of Princess Leia's resistance. He died very early. Adam Schlesinger, the singer from Fountains of Wayne. He was only 52. He died in April of 2020. Ellis Marsalis Jr., the father of Wynton N. Bradford, the legendary jazz musician. He was 85 when he died. John Prine, one of the most revered songwriters in the last 50 years. April 6, 2020. He was 73 after getting it. Roy Horn, who I once met, Roy of Siegfried and Roy. He survived the attack from the tiger, but he died in May of 2020 from complications due to coronavirus. Nick Cordero, who was a big star on Broadway. He was only 41. Herman Cain, who I met once at a radio appearance in New York, who famously ran for president for the Republican nomination in 2012. He died July 30th, 2020 of coronavirus. He was 74, hospitalized in Atlanta just a couple of days after going to a Trump rally where they mocked wearing masks. Trini Lopez, remember Trini Lopez, who sang If I Had a Hammer? He was in the Dirty Dozen. He was 83. He died of it. Tom Seaver, the great Hall of Fame baseball pitcher. I mean, we were Mets fans. My dad loved Tom Seaver. He died in his sleep in August of 2020. Lewy body dementia combined with COVID-19. Carol Sutton, a great character actress. She was on Lovecraft Country and Queen Sugar. She was in Monsters Ball and the Ray Charles movie. Charlie Pride, one of the only black performers to break through the country music scene, died of COVID. He was 86. Katie Oslin, country singer. You remember her? She was 78. Sonny Chiba, the great, great Japanese actor who was in so many terrific action films. He played Totoro Hanzai, the sword maker in Kill Bill. He died from pneumonia caused by COVID-19. Colin Powell. He was 84. Meatloaf died of COVID-19. And then Omicron took over. And when Omicron took over, COVID killed on average more than 2,000 people in America every day in January and February of this year. And we're used to it by then. I mean, it's just COVID, right? More than 125,000 Americans died in 2 months early this year. And we're not even talking about the millions of people who are diminished and grieving because they lost someone they love to COVID-19. Almost 200,000 children have lost a parent or a caregiver to this. These are the losses we can't measure. Now, about 700,000 of these deaths can be blamed on Donald Trump for not acting sooner, for not encouraging people to wear masks, for refusing to be seen wearing a mask, for talking down the vaccine. Never forget, Trump and Melania got their vaccinations secretly in the White House. They wouldn't allow themselves to be photographed getting it. And they left the White House never telling anyone they'd been vaccinated. This racist fat clown didn't know how to deal with it, so he ignored it. Remember Trump assured us that roughly 9,999,970 COVID deaths ago, that this will just go away in February of 2020? When we get to April, the warm weather has a very negative effect on that. He said it's going to disappear. One day, like a miracle, it'll disappear. He kept saying, if the shutdown continues, we'll definitely have far greater numbers than the numbers we're talking about. He kept lying and lying and lying over and over. It's going away. It's fading away. It's going to fade away. The Atlantic has a great listing of all of the lies he told about COVID. It's getting under control. He said it's getting under control July 2nd, 2020. July 4th, 2020, he said 99% of COVID cases are totally harmless. So where are we now? 1 million deaths in. Well, COVID has cut U.S. longevity rates by almost 2.5 years. In our country, there were 54.1 million people who were age 65 and older in 2019. And since then, this one virus has killed one out of every 74 of those 54 million people. And it's more concentrated in older folks. More than a quarter of all the deaths have been among people aged 85 and older. Another quarter have been in those aged 75 to 84. But it's not just old people. About 240,000 Americans between the ages of 18 and 64 have died. That's like a quarter of the total. J. Scott Davidson, CEO of the insurance company One America, said, among working age Americans, we are seeing right now the highest death rates we have ever seen in the history of the business. Death rates are up 40% over what they were pre-pandemic. And, you know, looking at our most recent winter surge, Yeah, the daily toll of deaths has slowed down, thank God. The 7-day moving average in America is now down from 4,000 deaths a day a couple years ago to about 300 deaths a day. It was 3,000 deaths a day in February. We're down to 300 deaths a day. Joe Biden was left with vaccines, but the Trump administration had no system in place to distribute them. He gets the credit for getting the shots in people's arms. But the cases are going up again. The hospitalizations are going up again. This is the BA2 subvariant, the one I had, the one my family had just got over. Close encounters are the third variant. That makes up more than a third of new infections. And CDC data says the vaccination rates are now much higher among adults of all races. But among Hispanic and Black adults and young adults of all races, you need to get your booster shots. That's lagging. Last week, for the first time in months, the CDC warned that the pace of new COVID-19 deaths would likely increase nationwide over the coming weeks. So what have I just told you? I've just told you a lot of numbers and facts, you know, and I thank you for listening. But these 1 million deaths, these are all people. This is someone's dad, someone's grandma, someone's brother, someone's wife. You know what? They were all once babies. Most of them got to grow up. All of them deserved a better ending than the one they got. Think about the people you know who have been lost to this, or the people that your loved ones have lost to this. There's no way to measure the economic cost. I mean, a million is just a number, right? It's a statistic. There's no way we can measure the human emotional cost. There's no way to measure the pain. 1 million lives, yeah, but there's no way to measure what we've lost. What so many families have lost, what so many children have lost. So let's go forward and let's try to look out for each other. If you're listening to a show like this, you're here for the empathy. It's our job to care about each other, whether we're thanked for it or not. And I thank you for listening. Quick break. We'll be right back.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
And welcome back. The bells of the Washington National Cathedral were rung 1,000 times in memory of the 1 million Americans who have died from COVID-19. I have a little one. He turned 8 the day this began, and he is now 10.
And we did the reverse. We were here.
You were here.
Yeah, and we went back to our Los Angeles home.
Ah.
Sunshine.
Yeah.
And during the pandemic, the streets, major boulevards,
oh, I know,
were like our private driveway.
Exactly.
I mean, and
recording.
The air
you can
was
keep on
crystal.
Recording on this. That's what you, this is what we do is we do the small talk and then we do the intro after we've been talking. So,
all right.
So you were actually, George, you guys went back to L.A. and it looked like it was heaven. I saw photos of the 10 freeway
Hills
empty.
Looked like it was three blocks away.
And the sky was blue.
Crystal. Pure. Unblemished. Flawless blue. And even the songbirds were happier.
Here, it was amazing because the streets were empty. I mean, anywhere you went, there was no one. It was so quiet. You could hear the birds. I
the
felt like
air was clean.
Oh, so clean.
Breathing was. But I did make my UCLA, I'm an alumni. I did a commencement speech mm-hmm. in my back patio. With six men dressed in black and masked. I did a commencement speech in my back patio.
And I bet it felt like you were socializing.
Oh, it was wonderful to have human beings, as masked as they were, looking ominous.
Here, I felt like Will Smith and his dog, like just walking around an empty Times Square. And then these Zoom comedy shows, let me tell you, it was like an AA meeting doing these things. I mean, trying to do stand-up. You know, you look like a Beirut hostage video from the 80s. I'm so glad that you're healthy. I'm so glad that you both are well.
So far... Knock on wood.
Did you feel very isolated? Was it just you and Brad and not seeing anybody?
I wrote another book. Put the time to good use.
There you
and go. Zoom. I mean, we became fluent in Zoom.
Same.
So thank God for that. We kept connections going.
Yeah, I'm so glad. You know, I guess this is the part in the interview where I should start the interview and do the introduction. Is that okay?
Right.
So we'll do the long obsequious introduction and then we'll jump back into
obsequious.
It has to. I'm just so glad you're healthy. I'm just so glad you're well. You never got it, huh?
Never got it.
Oh, thank God.
We've been healthy as horses. We walk 45 minutes in the morning in our neighborhood. Hancock
nice.
Park, very lush.
Yes, I used to. I lived in L.A. for years. I love walking around there. Yeah.
It's a wonderful place to walk. A
lot of bike riding here. Yeah.
Bike riding, runners. So the humanity remained, but the automotive disappeared.
Yes. I mean, I just went back to L.A. for the first time to take my kid to Disneyland before he turned 10.
And bravo. Bring them to California.
Oh, well, yeah.
Not
I mean,
Florida.
We spend every Christmas in Disneyland. And I mean in L.A., every Christmas we take him there. And like, just to not go for 2 years, I left stuff in the fridge, George. I left stuff in the fridge. So
we cleared out our New York refrigerator. Either way, ate it or we brought it back.
You were very
fresh.
So it must be wonderful to be back in your place here.
It is wonderful to be back. And it is glorious to be able to go to the theater.
Yes. Oh, I just saw my first Broadway show. And just
What'd you see?
I went and saw David Byrne's American Utopia.
Oh, we've got to see that. That's
one great.
On our list as well. We saw American Buffalo.
Oh,
and
the Fishburne version?
Yes.
Yeah.
And Sam Rockwell mm-hmm. got a Best Actor nomination. So, it's good to be back in New York.
Well, he's been on this show, too.
On this show?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Good.
Oh, well, hey, we don't book chimps on this one, let me tell you.
Oh, I am honored.
It's so...
We've just been elevated again.
Well, it's so great to have you back with us. So this is the part now where we've been talking for a few minutes. I should get around to the introduction. So Saturday, May 14th marks the inaugural Japan Parade in New York City to celebrate the friendship between New York City and Japan. I am bringing my kid. I'm so excited. And the first Grand Marshal is an actor, an activist, and an author. His recent graphic novel, They Called Us Enemy, chronicles his early life in the internment camps for Japanese Americans during World War II. We do not call them Japanese internment camps. They were American internment camps. Get that right. This gentleman is also, you might know, known for the role of Hikaru Sulu on a little TV show called Star Trek and reprising the role in 7 feature films. But his social media presence has made him a real-life hero to millions who weren't even alive yet when he first rose to fame. George Takei, welcome back.
Good to be back in New York City and good to be able to go to the theater.
Right?
Oh, however, with my mask on.
Yes.
It's not mandatory anymore, so it's a different New York, isn't it?
Yeah, but I still wear it.
Me
just
too.
Just as a courtesy to other people.
Absolutely.
I went to see my first concert. I went and saw Bob Dylan in the Beacon Theater. 2,000 people. Everyone with their shots. everyone with a mask. It was the most pro-life crowd I had ever been a part of.
But born in the USA.
How is it for you and Brad to be back in New York after being away for 2 long years?
Well, we love the rhythm, the vitality of this city, and the and we're theater people.
Yeah,
we love going to the theater, and it's coming back
yeah.
with wonderful first-class theater. The revival of Company.
Yes.
Patti LuPone.
Yeah.
The queen of Broadway musicals.
My mom-in-law just saw it. She's in New York, and she just saw it last week.
Yeah, she's brilliant. Oh. And in this one, the genders are switched.
Really?
Bobby is not a man anymore. Bobby is a woman.
I love it.
And it takes on a whole different tenor. Sondheim is fantastic. He's got so many layers in each one of his plays. And then when you change the gender, it's a whole different world altogether.
Oh, yeah.
The attitudes, the values. And I did Sondheim's Pacific Overtures at the
Classic
Stage Company. And at our dress rehearsal, Sondheim himself sat right beside me in the theater during a break. Oh, I love being in New York.
Yeah.
You see and you have these opportunities to share a moment with the giants.
Yeah.
And he's no longer is with us.
I got to meet him only once. He came and saw a show we did in Chicago when he was living
out
there. It was a political comedy tour I do with Stephanie Miller. Mm-hmm. And just to have a legend of his stature, and I was so sorry he didn't make it to see the West Side Story revival that Spielberg made for us. But, you know, you make me think about the last revival of Company, which was on Broadway. And in that one, the genders were original, but the actors were the musicians. Back, it was about 10 years ago.
Yes.
And the actors played all the instruments that the orchestra
did. Patti LuPone.
Yes, yes. And I just think about how last time I saw Shakespeare in the Park, they switched the genders and it was an all-female Taming of the Shrew.
Hmm.
And it's like the theater is that place where you're always pushing the creative boundaries. There's going to be this whole production of 1776 with no white males.
But it's about genders.
Yes.
How can you change genders on that?
Because that's the statement. I mean, if Hamilton can have a black man play George Washington, they're having all like non-binary and women and LGBT folks playing the founders. And it's like, that's what theater does. Theater is way ahead of cinema.
Exactly.
And for 2 years, we haven't had it.
New York is venturesome, it's experimental, and it's brilliant. I'm bringing some of these unthought of combinations together. Shakespeare. Shakespeare's on right now with James Bond.
Yeah, yeah.
Daniel Craig. But who really steals the show for me is Ruth Negga.
Oh, yeah.
She is brilliant.
Well, did you see Passing? I mean, she's great in that.
Oh, yeah, of course, the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, she's a wonderful actress. She knows how to use her body, her arms, becomes almost choreographed extension of her body. The washing of the hands.
With the blood, yeah.
Yeah. It's the whole arm that comes into play. She is magnificent.
I mean, I haven't seen it yet. It's I love the Joel Cohen Macbeth that was just mm-hmm. in theaters. But Daniel Craig got COVID and Ruth Negga didn't.
That's right.
It's so random that he got it, but she didn't.
Well, it happens. I mean, some of our friends that we've been near, you know, got it. And so far, Brad and I have managed to stay healthy and hale.
I'm so glad about that. And I'm so glad that you're here for this parade. I'm glad it's outdoors because I don't need you getting COVID. You know, I was so inspired to hear about this parade because, as you well know, last February marks 80 years since Franklin Roosevelt signed Executive Order 9066, which, of course, ordered all Japanese Americans on the West Coast and Western Arizona to be rounded up and sent to concentration camps. I know we call them internment camps, but they were concentrations of people. They were concentration camps. And I can't think of a better commemoration of that dark anniversary than a joyful celebration of how far we've come.
Exactly. And also, I mean, yes, we were put into American concentration camps simply because of the way we look.
Yeah.
We looked exactly like the people that bombed Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
That horrible war is 80 years behind us now. Back then, the United States and Japan were mortal enemies. And today, our strongest ally in Asia is Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. In fact, you know, Brad and I were invited to the state dinner during the Obama administration. The president had invited and was welcoming the Prime Minister of Japan, Shinzo Abe, to the United States. And the state dinner was in honor of the Prime Minister being here. And that night was, to me, the most surreal, thrillingly surreal evening. I looked at the East Room was filled with dignities from all over, from the world of politics, academia, from celebrities, and here was this raised dais, and the president of the United States, the first African-American president of the United States, was welcoming Shinzo Abe, the prime minister of Japan, only 80 years ago, mortal enemies. To the prime minister's left, to prime minister's right, sat the first black first lady of America. To President Obama's left sat the first lady of Japan, sitting there.
Yeah.
Next to her was me, a kid, an American kid, Japanese-American kid, who grew up behind the barbed wire fences of American concentration camps. And in front of me sat the man I love, Brad, my legal wedded husband. And to his left sat the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, sitting in front of the First Lady of Japan. So many once improbables there as thrilling reality. I couldn't, you know, I had to pinch myself. This is America. We change, we move forward, and we learn. Yes, I'm mindful of the challenges yet to come, but we are moving forward. Democracy is coming truer and more faithful to the ideals that we stand for. It was an incredible American evening for me.
That's why I don't say I'm an optimist. I say I'm a recovering cynic.
Good for you. Right. I'm glad you're recovering.
Well, when I first moved to New York City as a teenager in Greenwich Village, it was at the height of AIDS activism, where 20,000 Americans had to die before the president would even say the name of the disease. And it was from that plague that we witnessed the swiftest advancement for human rights of any oppressed minority group in history. And gay people have always been the oppressed minority within every minority group. And it happened here. America led. Politicians didn't do it. People did it. And it came to us because of a plague. And I think of the story you tell of your childhood, of what happened to you 3 weeks after you turned 5 years old in your parents' front yard in California. And I know you've told the story so many times, but I'm so grateful you do, because I've kind of given up on my parents' generation. You know, my parents knew the story. My parents talked about civil rights. But when we look at critical race theory, when we look at this Don't Say Gay bill in Florida, when we look at how these alleged leaders, these mediocrities who are just trying to appeal to the worst in voters by denying history, by denying reality, by denying humanity, I'm so grateful that you've told that story so many times, because I think young people will learn it. I think older folks and a lot of middle-aged folks, it's just too late. They're never going to learn. They're never going to take the history into their hearts.
We are learning, though. You know, we had that history that happened 80 years ago. But we had another president who talked about the China flu, the
Kung flu.
Kung flu, the Wuhan flu. And because of that, idiots in this country were attacking innocent, elderly, vulnerable people, women, elderly, and literally killing them. There was a Thai gentleman on the streets of Oakland, California, walking down the sidewalk. And this young man came running down the street with all that momentum behind him and smacked him down on the concrete sidewalk. He died. Innocent man being killed like that because of an irresponsible and stupid president of the United States. But at the same time, as you said, AIDS, a horrific killer, galvanized the community and brought about change. And that same stupid president, the first executive order he signed was the Muslim travel ban. Again, repeating that same mentality that put us in American concentration camps. But 9/11, 2011, thousands of Americans throughout the country rushed to their respective airports and welcomed Muslims coming to this country. Many of them were lawyers who provided assistance and legal advice to those people. And the Deputy Attorney General of this country, Sally Yates, an incredible woman.
And there's your hero.
She said to that president, "I will not defend this executive order." Two steps backwards, three steps forward. We are moving forward. That's why I'm an optimist. And we will have two steps backwards. That's part of the whole game. But not lose the faith and keep moving us three steps forward.
It is the dark side of democracy that throughout history, mediocre white politicians, whether they're bigots or not, have calculatedly counted on bigotry to help them get votes. Of course, I'm thinking Ron DeSantis and this Don't Say Gay bill, which, you can say gay. What it is it's coercive self-censorship. You can say gay, but then any Yahoo can sue you in the school district for saying it. It's completely disgusting, and it's done to appeal to a slice of voters that are already going to support him. And I think of one of the great liberal Supreme Court justices, Earl Warren, who once upon a time was a young, ambitious Attorney General of California. And he is the man we can credit decades before the Civil Rights Movement for what happened to your family, isn't he?
Exactly. Two steps backwards, but three steps forward. You said your parents' generation, but I learned about democracy, American democracy, from my parent, my father.
Yeah.
My father spoke both Japanese and English fluently. And so when we were incarcerated, he was elected block manager in both camps. He was able to speak to the immigrant generation and the American-born generation, Japanese to the immigrants and English to the American-born people. And so he was in the midst of, and particularly Tule Lake. That became the most notorious of all the camps because, you know, it was a relentless series of assaults on us. After they froze our bank account, after they put a quarantine on us, and then the soldiers came to take us away, they took everything from us and put us into these prison camps. And yet my father, after the war, when I was a teenager and curious about the internment, was able to explain it to me my father of that generation, and I realize now that my father was really an unusual Japanese American.
Yes.
Because he told me, and I was pretty angry by that, because I was starting to understand about our incarceration. He said, our democracy is a people's democracy. The ideals are great, but those ideals existentially are dependent on the people, the citizens who infuse a substance and meaning into those words. And because people who didn't give up hope, yes, there were many embittered, but despite the fact that the government came down with a loyalty questionnaire right in the middle of our incarceration, I mean, they took everything from us, our property, our money, and imprisoned us. And then they realized we were a year into imprisonment. There's a wartime manpower shortage. And here are all these young people that they could have had,
yeah,
that they categorized as enemy alien, which was totally irrational. We weren't the enemy, and we weren't we weren't aliens.
Your mom was born in California.
Absolutely. Sacramento, the capital of California, where Earl Warren made that hateful speech. And so I'm losing the point that I was trying to drive at. What was it now?
Well, about your dad.
Yes.
And how your dad, unlike many men who had shame about the experience, he wanted you to understand it.
He told me that American citizens have a responsibility. We have to be actively engaged in a participatory democracy. We have to participate in that. And he urged all his children, my brother and my sister, to be active in society and in student government at school. I became a student body president in middle school, senior board president at high school. I volunteered at the Adlai Stevenson for President campaign headquarters. Most people don't remember who Adlai Stevenson was.
I know.
Amazing governor of Illinois. Eloquent man.
Yes.
And
should have been president.
Should have been president. I supported so many candidates who should have been governor or U.S.
Your dad
senator.
And my dad would have gotten along very well. My dad was a history teacher, so what you're talking about means so much to me because, I mean, and you haven't even told the half of your story of the bayonets and having to stay in the horse stalls in Santa Anita, but I think about that's why you wrote the graphic novel to reach young people, and I think about, you know, Star Trek really was about activism and morality, and yet
absolutely,
you are the only cast member who we think of in that context. You are the only cast member who, in interviews throughout his life, got to a point where Star Trek was the least of the interesting things about you. I mean, how many, with respect to your cast members, and I've met several of them, Star Trek is incidental to an interview with George Takei.
Leonard Nimoy.
Yes, well,
he
of
was
course.
The one member of the cast that I can sit around, you know, set side and talk about issues of our time, the civil rights movement or the peace movement during the Vietnam War. Leonard Nimoy, it was another a person engaged with American democracy.
But that's why it means so much to me that you tell these stories and that you use your life as activism, because it applies to LGBT issues as well. There's
absolutely
so many young people now who wouldn't understand that Star Trek was canceled the same year as the Stonewall Uprising. It was not a riot, it was an uprising. And that it would have been impossible for you to find work if you had come out then. And so I'm just so grateful to you for telling these stories of your struggle and making the activism one and whole with the art you do. And for classing up Twitter, George.
Well, you know, we are all Americans, and the lesson that I was taught by my father, who bore the weight, the anguish, the pain, and the rage of that unjust incarceration the most, was able to educate me on the kind of government that we have. It's our fault, or it's our credit, that our government is what it is. Those are words, ideal words, due process. when you're arrested, you have a right to know why you're arrested.
Yes.
And then you have the right to challenge that why in a court of law. And the accuser has to deliver the evidence that those charges are true. And if they're not, then that's the end of it. But in our case, there were no charges, therefore no trial, and just simple punishment. America cannot be that. America is a better country than that. And what we're living through right now with all this turmoil from the Supreme Court, unelected people.
Thank you.
Who lied in their Senate confirmation speeches.
And were appointed by presidents the majority of Americans voted against and confirmed
exactly.
By a Senate that represents a minority of Americans.
You and I are kindred. We think alike.
Oh, my God. Thank you. That's actually coming
Thank
from you.
You
that means
something.
Thank
you for being on Sirius and sharing your thoughts with all your listeners.
Thank you for retweeting my stuff, George. That's the one thing that impresses my wife. Thank you.
We should.
Well, I know, but thank you for taking the most ridiculous thing humans have invented, celebrity, and using that capital to help the least of us and for keeping the history alive for people who weren't taught it.
Well, you mentioned Gene Roddenberry.
Yeah.
It's his vision, his philosophy that gave Star Trek its core values. Infinite diversity in infinite combinations, all working together in concert. That's what makes our society move forward.
It is so good to have you back on this show. Brad, it's so good to have you in the corner. Next time, I want you to get on the air, please, and talk with us a bit. The Japan Parade will be May 14th in New York City. It starts outside the Museum of Natural History at 81st and Central Park West. I'll be bringing my child. George Takei will be the Grand Marshal. Thank you.
Wave to me. In fact, let's do the street fair together.
All right.
Kid.
I'm all
What's
over
his
it.
Name?
His name is Henry.
Henry.
Yeah.
That's my brother's name.
Right on.
It's easy to remember your kid's name.
Well, thank you so much.
Live long and prosper.
Right back at you. We'll be right back.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Stephen in Kentucky, thank you for your patience on hold. You're on Sirius XM.
Hello, how are you tonight?
Very good. How are you?
Well, I'm doing all right. I know you were mentioning COVID. My brother and my sister-in-law now have contracted it.
I'm
she
so sorry.
She just gave birth to my niece on April the 21st, so... You know, for those who actually believe it's not real, well, you know, I think you all need a good psychiatrist that enjoys a challenge, obviously. As far as some of this other stuff I wanted to mention, you know, I just recently, my primary is on the 17th, on Tuesday,
okay.
In Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, I went through... that with the fine tooth comb, that ballot. And this is the way I operate. If these individuals, I write to them and they don't contact me back, then don't expect my vote.
Yeah.
This is a partnership. It is a partnership. And respect is a two-way street. They have a busy schedule. Guess what, darlings? I have a busy schedule too. And the fact is, that's not a valid excuse.
Right on.
And the fact is that For instance, in our Senate race, and I have there's no love lost between Rand Paul and I. He and I have even gotten into it.
Oh, we're going to be talking about Rand Paul in the next segment with Frank, because I don't know if you saw what he did yesterday, but Rand Paul has decided that Ukraine could use a few more rapes, a few more murders, a few more piles of children's bodies. He decided Ukraine can use a lot more suffering by single-handedly holding up $38 billion in funding.
Well, you know why that is, because he graduated from the Dr. Kevorkian School of Medicine. Did you know that?
I think he's actually more graduated from the Vladimir Putin School of Obedient Supplicants, but we'll get to that.
Well, apparently so. But, you know, actually, the Senate candidates that are running in Kentucky, to be perfectly frank, I actually had a chance to speak with Mr. Booker several years ago, 2 years ago to be exact, when he ran against McGrath in my state. And he actually phoned my home 8 times.
You're kidding me. That makes sense. He's that kind of guy.
But unfortunately, this time he didn't lift a finger.
Okay.
And I had a bad experience several years ago. I know you're a Bernie Sanders fan, but I have to say, I experienced some discrimination against some of the Sanders people during the 2016 election. I was working for Clinton. And I brought up some issues. I was interested in some of what he was standing for, what his positions were on some of these issues.
Right.
And I'm a liberal myself, but I don't feel like I have an exclusive monopoly on that.
Stephen, if you listen to this show, you know that I call out Bernie fans who hate Hillary fans and Hillary fans who hate Bernie fans. That civil war is destructive and stupid.
It is, but you know what happened, actually, when that happened? They actually attacked my sexuality, they did. They didn't have any other arguments. And after that experience, you know, dear, his chief of staff in his office in D.C. did apologize to me, and I appreciate that.
That's nice.
But none of the ones who actually engaged in the behavior ever did. And ever since that time, I've soured on that man.
I don't blame Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, Jesus, or Jodie Foster for what their followers might do to others.
What I'm saying is, your staff is a reflection of who you are. And that's what I'm saying. And that's what
were these volunteers or were they staff?
No, they were staff.
Okay.
They were.
Okay.
And I would have expected with staff that they would have had a little bit more decorum. I didn't care for them either, but I put that aside because of the situation itself.
Well, I don't hold that against the concept of Medicare for all, but go ahead.
No, well, to be perfectly frank, I think we need to go further than Medicare for all. This is my opinion on it. And people may think I'm a kook, so the hell what? I've been through a breakdown for 15 years, and I'm overcoming it in my life and getting back on my road to recovery. After that experience, you don't give a shit what people say anymore. My feeling on it is this. I think we really need alternative health care. I think we've had those herbal cures, supplements over in China and Japan for centuries that have cured a lot of these diseases like diabetes, heart attacks, strokes, cancer, all these serious maladies. And the fact is, what we need to do, I believe, is we need leadership that will actually work with China and Japan in importing those over here. And let me tell you something, all that bullshit about the pharmaceuticals and the insurance, well, you know what? You play their game. You know what you do? You go ahead and you distract the pharmaceutical industries.
I hear you.
And while you're distracting them, guess what? Then that's when you import those cures over here. And then you get the FDA to do the necessary experimentation.
Preach.
To see whether or not they are safe for public consumption. And if they are, what that is you start to create new businesses that have munificent intent and at the same time can turn a lucrative profit.
Nice.
And that's how you start to put these pharmaceuticals out of business. You have three in one. You would have killed three birds with one stone. You would have had your alternative health care reform. You would have had increased business labor opportunities for people.
That's
and
right.
Then also would have had internationalism. We need partnerships.
Stephen, when I become supreme ruler, I want you to be my chief of staff and my minister of propaganda. I'm standing up and cheering for you. I got to hit a break, but I thank you for calling, and I wish you a beautiful weekend. I am not going to fuck with Stephen from Kentucky, and I don't want my staff, I don't want my staff to fuck with Stephen from Kentucky either. No.
Yes.
Frankly, my staff is better. Stephen, you're a prince. Thank you.
Five
we'll be right
star.
Back.